like the act of learning to walk. No baby is going, oh God, I'm horrible at walking. I'm never gonna get this.
Not trying this again.
I'm not, yeah. Or I'm not trying hard enough.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, right? I'm just not a walker. I just don't walk.
Yeah.
And like, I think about that with like creativity in humans.
Yeah.
Like when humans are like, I'm just not creative. And it's like, you're human, you're inherently creative, but what we've put around the bounds of our understanding of creativity is really constricting. It's a structure that does not create growth.
Hey, you found yourself in The Groove, a podcast where we create space for reflection and conversation to unfold. We explore the human experiences that connect us all to deepen our understanding of ourselves, our connection to the world, and the ways we engage with the aliveness within us. We're glad you're here.
Here we are.
Here we are.
We're doing the thing together. How exciting.
Very.
So we have this podcast. We're in the groove. We're jumping into the groove right now, which is really exciting. And I wanted to start by kind of talking about who we are to each other first. I think that's really important. For our listeners, for anyone joining us for the first time, this is the first time. Here you are. I'm Carly, and this is my mom.
I'm Chris, and this is my daughter.
And this is something that we've been talking about doing for a long time. Mm. This pattern of us connecting has been a through line for as long as I can remember. And how excited I am to start to be able to share this.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been a through line forever. You talked early and young, and it feels like we were having coffee drinks or coffee time.
I was ready. I was like, all right, sit down. We got to talk.
Yeah, coffee time since you were like four, and we'd have these great conversations, and we just always have. And I think they've, for me, been such a connection to you. It's one of the ways that I think our relationship deepens, and it also is a way I learn more about myself as well as learning more about you as we do it. And I love that. It just is such a gift.
We decided to call this podcast In the Groove. And this is something, as we were exploring, we kind of started talking about like, well, we want this feeling of flow, right? And this started to get us in, how do we create flow?
Yeah.
And one of the things that's really stuck with me from that conversation that ultimately led us to the name is that we wanted to explore how we can create space for things to happen and to unfold.
Yeah. Space is an interesting thing, especially when you're talking about conversations, because I think so often, like when you talk with people, there's a wanting to fill in blanks. And our conversations aren't like that. They're really opening and discovering and exploring. And like you said, being able to turn things from different angles and also add nuance and layers to it, which makes me think deeper about whatever the topic is. Then I bring the stuff everywhere I go, whether it's in other relationships or it's in my work or wherever it is. And it's fulfilling.
Oh, so that's a little bit about who we are to each other,
yeah,
which is wonderful. But I would love to hear you describe what you do, not necessarily tidily, but maybe describe what you do without titles.
I love that because we get so hooked on our titles.
We do.
What do I do? I think I listen deeply. I observe, like I really watch and listen and pay attention to a lot of things that are happening with people. And I've always thought about my role in an environment, like how does what I do or say influence what's happening in the environment? And so I think in that respect, what I do is I pay attention and then I bring myself to the situation in a way that is good for whoever and whatever is in the space. And with that, I've often worked with young people. Leaders in those situations have a lot of influence, and not control, but influence over what the ground looks like and what it's made of. And is it made of something that can help the people in it to grow, just like a garden, I guess.
It's that whole idea of how do we use space as structure?
Yeah.
Which we'll get to talk about later. But so all of these things is how you spend your time, how you spend your energy. And sometimes it is helpful to have a little bit of structure to understand what that means.
Yeah.
So what are your titles?
Now you want my titles.
Now I want them.
Yeah. So I, for over 30 years, almost 35, have been in education. I have taught elementary school, I've taught health education, physical education, and I've been an administrator for all those years. And so the role there to me has been facilitator. That's really what I look at. I've also am a coach. I've coached sports. I've coached pitchers. And I'm also a life coach. So I have this coaching aspect to everything that I've done. And I think a lot of times, even in education, as I have worked with students and worked with teachers, I see myself as a coach.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So those are some of the big titles, I guess, of mine.
Yeah. And I also want to point to this really cool background that you have in adventure education.
Mm.
And maybe you can just speak a little bit about what that is and what that means, because I think the principles of adventure education were so present in my childhood that you brought in. And I think that would be a really cool thing for us to share.
The first thing that comes to mind when you ask that is experiential education, activities that engage a group, ultimately in group problem solving and also in personal risk taking. And so you'll do activities that are just playful games, you know, learning belay skills, which is like
ropes
and climbing and rope management, and then climbing. And some of the climbs are more individual climbs. Of course, they're never individual because you have somebody down below supporting you with the ropes. And some of them are tandem climbs that you have to really, again, support each other in one way or another. And so a huge piece of that is experiential education. So you do something and then you learn something from what you do. And now that you've learned that, so now what? You play around with it and you tweak something or you do it a little differently or you just think it through and what worked and what didn't work. And I think that's been a huge impact for me in my life when I started using adventure education that for me couldn't help but pour over into every area of my life, which is, I'm sure, why you felt it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things that I often reflect on with Adventure Ed is that it's such a playground for developing structures that feel organic, supplemental, and applicable across a wide range. Like this is truly,
transfer.
Yeah, this is truly one of those structures that is not rigid in its form. And I think that's a really interesting kind of pillar from which I've grown up supported by.
Yeah.
So I'll
Yeah.
We'll start kind of building the puzzle.
What's not
out.
Your title?
I don't know. I don't even know my title. Human being. Friend.
That's one.
Yeah. I am really, really inspired by the way that we, and when I say we, I don't just mean we as humans, but we as ideas, creative processes, endeavors, the world, how we all connect in space. And I don't mean that in the way of like, we're all connected, because we are. But it's like, what is our relation to form and space?
Mm.
I think really big. Like that's one of the things that I do without titles is I really enjoy the nebulousness of the world that we live in. I find myself building safety and comfort in the nebulousness.
Mm.
That's something that
That's so interesting. It makes me think like no matter where you are, there you are.
Mm.
And you can find comfort and ease in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. What I think I do is witness the world. And I really actively practice witnessing its beingness without judging it.
I hear so much crossover with what you're saying you do and what I do. We just, I think, come from it from a little bit of different angles.
Well, we always joke, we have 60% the same brain.
Yes, we do.
But then that 40% is where all of the space happens, where we're extending towards each other or sharing something. And it's this just right threshold of I understand where you're coming from, but I don't understand all of it. And I'm so curious about where else it's coming from. I think another thing that I do is I connect with other people. I think what I do is I work to share and understand and become my own friend so deeply that it can spill outwards.
Okay, pause. You said become my own friend.
Yes.
Talk more about that.
So something that I have really been thinking about a lot, and we're kind of jumping all over the place.
Yeah.
But, and in this last year especially, is how do I create space within myself and then build this chemistry and sense of home and safety within me? That is this anchor that I have within me always.
You can't get away from yourself.
You can't get away from yourself, no matter where you go.
And that's
you are.
A great person to have with you.
Yeah. And so I've really been thinking about, like, how am I really honoring this relationship to myself? How am I engaging with my sense of aliveness? And I think about that a lot in the way of how I build my friendships too, where it's like, I often think about when we say they're just a friend, when someone's just a friend, and it kind of like breaks my heart. Because I'm like, this person is someone you actively choose to spend time with for no reason other than the joy and levity or just their own beingness that you get to experience and witness with them. The more deeply I can know myself, the more deeply I can be safe in my sense of being, present in my sense of being, the more present I can be with others, the more deeply I can know them.
It speaks to intimacy.
Yeah.
And it's not only intimacy in the romantic kind of sense, but the intimacy of being human.
Yeah.
In connection with other people.
The intimacy of being human. That's what it is, right? And like, I keep going back to like, isn't that the point? Because I think we often live in a who cares culture.
Yeah.
Where we have a really hard time letting ourselves fully, deeply, vulnerably pursue something that we really care about.
Yeah.
It's cool to be cool. Like, and I've been thinking about even the word cool, it has this level of detachment that's not detached in its presence, but detached, literally stepped back and held away.
Like an aloofness.
An aloofness. Yeah. And isn't the point of being human to be in its intimacy, to be held in that experience of humanness?
All right. So we got here talking about what you do without saying what you do.
Good callback. I would have just kept going.
So what do you do? What's your title?
So I live in this world where I would say I'm between artist and designer. And I know we often have this idea of what an artist or a designer is doing, especially when it comes to like a visual sense of the word. But I think what I mean when I say artist is I consider myself like a professional, playful person.
Like, let's all sign up for that.
Let's sign up for that. How can I be a camp counselor forever?
Like, yeah.
That was basically the question, right? But I have this experience in the design world, and maybe we'll take a minute to kind of also express like how we think about design and art, or how I think about it. And design is something that proposes a solution. It accumulates information. It has a level of observation of the world and perception. It's looking to find connections, but ultimately what it's doing is it's aiming to provide a structure that can be a very elegant and beautiful solution, but ultimately it's a solution, right? The way that I see art is that instead of a solution, it opens a question. It creates space within the person engaging with it to experience something from a different lens.
Yeah.
It's that shift of like, oh, like when you see a film that just like yanks and suddenly you're like in this different space experiencing a little, something a little different than maybe what you're normally used to experiencing around it. It opens something up for you. And that's really how I kind of see myself as an artist. And the medium that I actually see is life. I almost imagine it as like this creative process that we all have within us in some capacity.
Yeah.
It's like this mycelial network, right? And the more we engage with this network, the stronger that it becomes in this process of the creative act unfolding. The fruit, what we see, like what we are saying, is like a mushroom of a mycelial network. That's maybe a painting or a sculpture or a song or something. But to me, I'm an artist in the way that the mycelial, this network of current and energy, is what I'm engaging with so deeply.
Yeah.
And I think what I do is witness it in a way and then help tell stories around it that people can see themselves reflected within.
Yeah. And a lot of times you're telling your story through physical representations.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, some of the conversations we've had when you're painting is that you say you don't fill in all the details because the seer's brain will fill in the details that need to be filled in, which I was, my mind was blown when you shared that with me, but it's also really cool. They fill in the details based on their own experiences and their own lives and what has happened in the world with them up to that point that they're reading or viewing or doing whatever they're doing with some piece of art that you've put forward.
Yeah, yeah. And I often think about how words can bounce energy or like absorb energy or transfer energy. And
that's making me think of what I was saying before about like one of the things that I see as one of my roles is how in an environment when I'm working with young people or I'm working with teachers who are adults, like how I say things and interact and what I put out there is going to have some influence over the experience of whoever is in that group with me, especially when I'm leading it, because whether I intend it or not, I'm the leader, right?
Right.
And so that's very similar to what you're talking about.
100, like I really see words as containers for energy.
Mm.
And so I also think of words as transient structures. Like there's something to help us reflect an idea, but they're not always the entirety of the idea.
Yeah.
And how much nuance there is in like a sentence that could be gone into other, like hundreds of other places. And while words can be really limiting, they can also be really helpful, just like the way we were talking about titles. I guess another thing that's I do without saying it is being very meta.
Every once in a while, you forget to say the beginning part. Not forget, but you have it so in your head. And then you add something like, whoa, wait a second.
Wait, hold on. I know you see what you see in very clearly, but we do not have privy to your brain.
What's layer one there?
Yeah. Are you asking me what's layer one there?
Well, yeah, I am.
I've been thinking a lot about form and space. Specifically around Eckhart Tolle's work, exploring form and space.
Oh, he's so good, isn't he?
Oh. And how ideas, the word I, these things that have divisions are form, right? And this goes back to this idea of space as well. And it's kind of like creating space in my brain. So instead of this thing trying to stay here where I can like keep following it and keep picking apart, I was like, I can't hold enough space to have that running and have me taking up and engaging with that space running.
Yeah.
So I started.
It was a way for you to let it out. It was a container to let it out so that you could look at it.
That's exactly what it is. Because I was like, I need to get the structure out that then I can feel within.
It reminds me of that phrase, what you resist persists.
Right.
And it's almost like the resistance of putting out the things you're experiencing or the feelings you're having actually has them continue to circle around in your brain with no space or air, with no air to grow, no light to shine on it for growth and to be able to see it as it is instead of it just swirling around like a tornado in your brain, right?
And when there's too much form and not enough space, for me, I get this like constriction start to happen. Like it is like almost like this feeling of suffocation where it's like I need some wiggle room. I need to break out of this.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like I need to be on top of keeping that space up because otherwise it starts to get clogged. And I think that happens for a lot of people. Like when we don't actively create space for ourselves in our brain, that's where we get that bottleneck of emotions and things start to get so packed in there. I know for me that's true. Where then you let it out and it's like,
yeah. a flood.
The
floodgates open.
And that's really overwhelming. And if that's the only, like, for a while, that was kind of the experience that I had with emotion, is like, I could structure, I could process it, I could navigate it, and like, we're good.
Very rationalized.
Yeah, but then, of course, like, that's not,
you're not really.
That's not the truth of the matter. That's the fact of what you're doing. But the entirety of the truth, that's it's far bigger than that. That I realized, I was like, I need to keep a stream of this. And part of that is a devotion to the process of it, of creating that space.
Oh, you know, you taught that. Brings me back to the structure and process, and we'll talk more about that in future podcasts too. But the process of anything is so important. I think that links back to the experiential education too. The process of it is really what's most important, and not the end product of what happens. Because sometimes when you're like in that field of adventure ed, you do some kind of an activity. And in terms of reaching the goal of the activity, because there's typically a goal, you might fail, like big fat red F. And then you dissect it a little bit and you look at it and you realize that there were parts of the process that were actually really successful. And you can take that, you can inspect it and look at it and say, okay, this actually worked really well, and we can move that forward into the next round or apply it to the next activity or the next problem that we're trying to work on or goal that we're trying to reach. And there's this idea too, I think in our society, that failing is bad, period. And if you have an F, you know, we conjure up images of it in a big red F across the top of the paper. and really, and I learned this in Adventure Ed, you want to fail forward. Failing has to be part of your experience. Nothing goes so smoothly in life that you can look back on it and say, I've never failed. I mean, even little kids, when you look back, they're trying to walk. They fail all the time at trying to walk. And they're failing forward because every time they fall, they learn something and they grow something, whether it's strength or they're learning something about how to coordinate their bodies that allows them to get better at it. And so despite the failures, they just keep doing it.
To me, that is such an indicator that humans inherently want to let the path unfold without judgment. Like the act of learning to walk, no baby is going, oh God, I'm horrible at walking. I'm never going to get this.
Not trying this again.
I'm not trying hard enough.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, right? I'm just not a walker. I just don't walk.
Yeah.
And like, I think about that with like creativity in humans.
Yeah.
Like when humans are like, I'm just not creative. And it's like, you're human. You're inherently creative. But what we've put around the bounds of our understanding of creativity is really constricting. It's a structure that does not create growth.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I started to think about.
Oh my gosh, that's so well said, Carly.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really well said.
One of the things.
Oh, wait. Wait. That whole idea of creativity, we have this package that we've created as a society around what it means to be creative. Mm-hmm. And often it's, can you paint or can you draw? Or I think sometimes we talk about music as a creative endeavor, but more than anything, I think when people think of art, they think of fine art and painting and drawing and that kind of thing. But creativity is so much more than that. That's one way of being creative. But as humans, we are creative. You're right.
Yeah. And to kind of support this, like as we were talking about learning and failing, I think, and this also ties right into creativity, as a culture, we look at time through a linear lens rooted in scarcity. Mm. That time must be spent wisely. Mm. And then when we also add in this idea of product over the journey of letting it unfold, I think there's a lot of judgment of, did I spend my time in a way that I can prove it was worth spending?
Yeah, did I get the A?
Did I get the A? Did I create art that other people will like?
Yeah.
Did I spend my time in a way that was good enough because I don't have a lot of time? And when we look at time as this are rooted in scarcity. Mm-hmm. When we look at time rooted in scarcity, that becomes really constrictive. And then time itself becomes a constrictive structure.
Yeah.
That it's like, well, I have to make it my time worth it. And as soon as you add that like gripping pressure of how I'm spending my time, being a beginner at something,
yeah,
being vulnerable about something, potentially failing at something that we're now rooted in judgment for ourselves on, why am I going to spend my time engaging with something that's going to make me feel way worse about myself?
Yeah. Eventually? So we limit ourselves in the end because we don't choose that endeavor. We stick with the things that we feel the most comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're seeing time as a form rather than like, and I do think there's time where time is a form.
Yeah.
But also time is space. So one thing, we've been talking about things that have been inspiring us lately. Mm. What I'd love to hear from you is, what have you been paying attention to?
Yeah. I immediately thought of two different ways of paying attention. One is paying attention to my internal state of being, and then paying attention to what's going on around me. And so I'm going to try to answer that from both ends. I think what I've been paying attention to inside of me, which might be most important, not because I'm most important, but you have this whole inner world, you know, inside of you. I've been really paying attention to how do I operate in a challenge, and what kind of challenges do I like to take on versus the challenges that are put on me, and how am I operating? What's my internal operation of how I look at it and how I feel about it, how I talk to myself about it, and how I ultimately create space to take on the challenge?
One of the things that you said that really piqued some curiosity in me is the challenges that you take on and the challenges that are kind of bestowed upon you.
It sounds so regal when you say it that way.
But just in the way of like life hands us
challenges.
Like challenges.
Yeah.
And that's part of being alive.
So when I'm taking on a challenge, I'm so determined. Like I am so determined. Like I love playing pickleball, as you know. And it's
okay, hold on. We need to back up though, because I'm gonna call you both Chris and Mom. So for people listening.
Yeah.
That is an incredible understatement of how this woman feels about pickleball. Because I think it's important to dive a little bit into your lore and say that you are a former D1 softball player.
Yep.
You have always been an athlete. I think there is a genetic line of whether you want to call it stubbornness or dogged determination.
I like to call it perseverance.
Perseverance. Words are structures that we used to play with. But
yeah, but stubborn sounds so negative.
Bull-like, if you will. No, but you have a deep background in this engagement of physical and mental alignment and pursuit.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that like our listeners understand that when you're like, I like pickleball, it's not like sometimes I hit a ball around, which is great. That's no hate.
Right.
But you are like, yeah, I think I'm going to go to the opens for the pickleball professional opens. And I beat people half my age. That's not how you say it. I'm just saying. But I want people to understand the intensity to with which you play pickleball.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
To which you play pickleball.
Yeah. I love to compete.
Yes.
I just love to compete. And I think the other thing about competing and competition is, you know, I love it because it also brings out in me that determination to get better at things. And so for me, competition isn't so much about did I win or did I lose? Don't get me wrong. I would much rather win than lose. But it's about what do I need to do? So it goes back to that failure thing. Like, what do I need to do if I'm not executing something well enough to win? What needs to be done? What do I need to learn? What do I need to practice? What do I need to get better at so that I can execute that and really be on top of the game?
Mm.
You know, I love that whole experience of it.
It's like a playground for letting things unfold and for you to engage with without totally. High risk. Like in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it's just pickleball.
In life. That looks kind of hard for you to say. I saw a little twitch in your eyes.
Yeah, there was.
But as this way of practicing being in high stress situations, opportunities for growth, opportunities for self-talk, pickleball is not necessarily the end goal, but it's the vehicle through with which you can experience life differently.
Totally.
And to me, that's the point of doing things.
Yeah.
And the point of building skills and the point of engaging with things.
This started from the question about how my internal world, I pick the challenge versus if a challenge is bestowed upon me. And I started talking about determination when I choose my own challenge. And also, I think, you know, when I'm choosing my own challenge, the growth mindset of I can get better at this and I will get better at it. So that determination when I have my own goals and my inner determination, like I'm going to do this. And whenever I have the opportunity to practice something and play, like a lot of people don't necessarily like practicing pickleball. I love practicing. That sounds crazy, but I do.
You're deepening the grooves.
Yeah, totally deepening the grooves so that what I do in practice actually ends up in my games or in my tournament play or whatever it is. And when a challenge is kind of so back up a little, I'm very aware and in the flow and in the groove when I'm carrying on with my challenge. Like when I go and I practice or I play, there's nothing else in the world. It's just me, the court, the people on the court, the equipment, like that's it. My head doesn't wander anywhere else. So it's this really in the flow experience, which I love.
Really quick. We've brought up this idea of the groove and we've brought up this idea of the flow.
Yep.
And I want to take a minute to kind of chat about these two concepts.
Okay.
Because to me, this again is this idea of space and form.
Yeah.
And the groove is the form that we can create. The groove is like the act of practicing, the act of creating channels.
Yeah. What fires together, wires together.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we have this idea of flow. And to me, flow is what moves through the groove. So the more we deepen and open and widen these grooves, it's like the more we can invite flow to happen. And flow to me is this state of just alignment. Yeah. And alignment requires space. It's like those tile games that you play. Like if you have too much on the board, there's no space for things to move around and actually align.
Yeah.
Like those puzzle games.
Yeah.
You actually need that space to pull things back together.
Yeah.
So now high level. What's it like when something is that you're just navigating because this is life right now?
I think it's a little harder for me to be in flow. I think part of being in flow is being present.
Yeah.
And so when something gets bestowed upon me that I don't necessarily didn't choose to engage with, one of the things I'm really paying attention to is do I stay present with it so that I can have... I guess apply that determination because I'm not at that place yet where I think maybe in some things I can apply that determination, but not in everything, you know, where I just, because I don't want to do it. who made this happen? but I also think they cross over where when I have a challenge that has been put on me, that I like to find ways to make things work no matter what it is. I think that can be an advantage and a disadvantage in the end. Probably like so many things in life, there's two sides to every coin. What are you paying attention to?
We've basically been circling it the whole time.
Space and form?
Space and form. Well, yes, and the idea of structure that creates space. I think so often we look at structure as something that can be really constricting or controlling, something that we have to adhere to, something that we're judging ourselves against.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I don't love rigidity.
Wait.
Surprise. Like, the fastest way to kill my flow is to be like, you have to do the same thing every day. I would, like, not be happy at all. I would not
be creative. That for a little while, and you were not happy.
I was not happy.
Yeah.
Very quickly became a shell of a human being.
Yeah.
But what I'm also really thoughtful about is having no structure. Like, if I'm thinking about myself as simultaneously the water and the cup, if I have no structure, the water's all over the floor.
Yeah.
Like, the water's not doing anything. The water can't take shape in some way. The water can't be poured.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah.
Like, the water is, it's now
a great analogy.
Disorganized
yeah.
in some way of lacking structure to become.
Yeah.
And we could, I mean, if we want to get really philosophical, we could just say, well, like, now the water is just the water on the floor.
But it is. You're right. But to be able to do something more creative with it, which actually brings me back to something you talked about, being able to create space.
Mm.
Space for what?
The thing to unfold. Like, space for an allowance of beingness.
Yeah. So it's more about things to unfold in you. Or grow in you?
Yeah, I think maybe it's the same thing, actually, this idea of unfolding and growing that I think about.
Yeah.
That there's something, like, it's a spiral outwards that needs space to continue expanding into. Whether that's something that I'm intrigued by, something that I'm working on, the way that I see myself existing within the world, even.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can I create structures that support that exploration rather than constrain it?
Mm.
And the same thing in my exploration of friendship. Like, how can I create organic breathing structures? And I'm using structures very, very loosely. It's kind of patterns of thinking, ways of engaging with the world.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
That can be transferred across these other spaces that give me something to root down into, like almost like a trellis.
Yeah.
That I can then grow up and through and against. And how am I engaging in learning structures, kind of like the same thing in adventure education, that are transmutable?
Yeah.
They can be, the through line of them is so honest in its beingness. It's so peeled away from all of these other distractions and details and layers that it's like, this through line happens in 8 different places in our lives. It's all the same. Like, this whole thing is the same thing.
Yeah.
The core of it is very similar.
Yeah.
How can I more fully engage with it by understanding the core?
What you're so touching upon is this, despite what's happening in the world to someone or in the world around someone, I don't necessarily want to say to someone, but in the world around someone, we have these common experiences.
Mm.
It almost doesn't matter what the context of the experience is, but that we have this pattern of thinking and way of going about things internally that really resonates with people. And and that it doesn't matter what the topic is. It's that inner experience that someone has that is it's so common.
Yes. Yes.
Which is why I think some of the work that you've been doing has been resonating.
Yes. I think sometimes we so silo ourselves in our own experiences. Because of all the noise that gets added to it.
Or the details of the experience.
And that's exactly what I mean by noise. Like, all of this extra fuzz that we forget that this through line of sadness, of wanting to be our ideal selves, of fearing fumbling, of waiting for ideal conditions to do something vulnerable. We all are holding this so close to us.
Protecting it.
Because these are really vulnerable experiences.
Yeah.
And I think we live in a world where voyeurism is very present.
Especially with social media.
With social media. And our brains want to connect deeply.
Mm.
And our brains are also terrified of being singled out and left out of the group.
Mm.
And that is such a innate part of the human experience. We relied on it for survival.
Yeah.
Like, it was instinctual for us to be accepted into a group.
Yeah.
If we were not.
Yeah.
We were not surviving.
Right.
And our brains are having trouble in this insanely short amount of time, in the grand scheme of things, going from surviving in the world and literally having predators and trying to find food and keeping ourselves alive in the fear of that. to now what we perceive as life or death fear, because our brains are trying to connect experiences. But like me being rejected by someone is, I'm not going to die.
Right. And it's retraining your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we've explored a lot together, ultimately, and this is where I think it's so cool, these ties, without saying, is we've been exploring structures that create feelings of, for me, security and familiarity without blocking me off from the world.
Yeah.
In fact, they open me up more deeply to the world and experiencing
it. And you know what's so interesting as you say that? Like when I hear what you've been saying, it's what you're talking about are internal structures.
Yes.
Like your structures of thinking and being.
Yes.
Versus the external structures of the world having to shift or change.
Yes.
Like those are there. And if there isn't one obstacle out there, there'll be another. You know, there's always something to climb over, through, around, whatever. But so much of how you navigate that has to do with what you've created in you to be resilient and problem solver and just able to manage your way. I don't even want to say manage. That's not the right word.
Flow with it.
It's to flow with it and thrive your way through something.
Yeah.
Not just survive it, but really grow and nurture yourself in ways that allow you to be alive in this really electric way. Mm. Just like there's this energy that you have that allows you to navigate whatever comes your way.
Yeah.
And that's an internal structure that you've created, patterns of thinking. And when I think of my work as a coach, a life coach in particular, how you approach it and how you think about it and how you frame it is really going to open up new pathways, new grooves,
new
for
grooves.
You to flow into or to flow with.
Yes.
That can just create this sense of ease. And it doesn't mean the problems in your life disappear, but there's this ease and confidence with, I can handle problems. I can handle the challenges that have been thrown at me. I can handle discomfort.
And what really excites me, and this is kind of the meat of what we're, I'm vegetarian. The
the tofu.
the structure with which we're structuring this podcast is, here's the meta-ness, exploring structures that we can have in our back pocket, that we can mix and match, that we can use to I don't want to say free us because that sounds so goofy, but that we have at our engagement.
Yeah.
That we have, that we can help understand the world and the way that we're existing within it.
Yeah.
And what we'll kind of be doing through this season is sharing some of the structures that have created a lot of space for us and how we've used them, how we've implemented them, how we've created with them.
Yeah. Because how we talk about them.
How we talk about them. The cool thing I find about these structures is they are a creative act in their engagement.
Yeah.
And the more grooves you have, the more you just choose which ones you want to take.
Yeah, and which ones make sense for what you need at any given time.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Oh,
these
this
are
is
very
so exciting.
Enlivening. Yeah,
yeah. I love these conversations.
Oh, me too. So that's a little bit about us and a little bit about what we're going to be really exploring in these next few episodes. And one of the things we talked a lot about was this idea of space.
Yeah.
And space is a place that we grow. Creating space to grow in and within. And in the next episode, what we're going to be starting to explore is these zones of growth and how we can use this structure to create space for us to grow and understand what we're moving through, how we're approaching something, and where we're at, both mentally, emotionally, physically, but just this container that, or this structure that allows us to explore something with maybe a little bit more bounding for us to understand and move within.
Yeah. Yeah. Structure. It's important.
Structure is important.
As your mom, structure is important.
No. No, thank you. I'm a grown up. You can't tell me anymore.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to our next podcast.
Me too.
Thanks for hanging out with us. Join us next time as we explore our first structure, Zones of Growth. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts, or you can watch us on YouTube at The Gnarliest Carly. We would love to hear from you in the comments about what's been inspiring you lately. If you enjoy reading blogs and our innermost thoughts, check out the Substack at substack.com/@thegnarliestcarly. You can also find me on TikTok and Instagram, surprise, at The Gnarliest Carly. Until next time, take it easy.